Welcome back to Schaefer's Market Mashup. After a two-year hiatus, we have Kevin Davitt on. Kevin, we have come a long, long way from me mispronouncing your name, not once, but twice on podcasts. It is great to get you back in the studio. I mean, this is like Ricky Henderson coming back to the A's. This is ABBA going back on tour. It's a reunion that was not only much needed, but universally asked for. How are you, man?
Wow, what an introduction. My God, I love that you just brought up Ricky Henderson. My kid is kind of a baseball nut, and he loves the show. And he asked me, who was your favorite player growing up? And I'm like, Ricky Henderson. And so he got him on some team he built or something and loves talking about his speed and his agility. I think maybe you overstated it. I didn't know it's been 2 years, but I'm doing really well. I'm excited to be back talking to you and part of the Schaefer's Market Mashup.
Right. So you are now the head of options content at NASDAQ. Is that the correct official title?
Yeah, we'll go with it. And whatever you did call me on the last podcast, I can guarantee you I've been called far worse.
Our last episode was April 2021. Went back and looked at it, filled with baseball puns, chats about volatility, hedging.
Yeah, it was right around opening day. I got you.
Yep. Hedging, equity exposure. Joe Teague was on as well. It was amazing to listen to because it was everything you needed to know ahead of that inflation spike that we already know as, you know, we've undergone. And so what, fast forward 2 years or so, our boy Jay Powell, literally hot off the presses here, increases rates by a quarter point. How about that? You know,
shocker.
Shocker. And, you know, he'll start chatting as we're recording now. Maybe we'll hop in and out of that. We'll get to all that. But first, tell me about what's new in your life in the last year. Tell me about the job change, what it's meant, challenges, discoveries, what you've learned about investing. Maybe let's dive into it.
Man, that's a lot to potentially cover. So if I leave stuff out or you want to pull on a thread, let me know. So going back a year ago, I moved from Cboe Global Markets last time we spoke to NASDAQ. So one exchange operator to another. Maybe that is like Ricky going from the Yankees to the A's or vice versa. Who knows? I had spent about 7 years at Cboe. I loved my time there. I worked in the Options Institute, and the mandate there was unequivocally options education. So we're talking about capital market tools, derivatives specifically, and it's imperative. Like, there has been tremendous volume growth over the past couple of years, and it's really important for end users to understand the potential benefits as well as the risks inherent in any market at any point in time. Now, that said, my role at NASDAQ is similar with a few distinctions. So let me explain that a little bit. I continue to create content about the utility, the risks associated with options. When it's appropriate or I'm able to find some analogy, be it sports or music or something broadly relatable, I try to bring that in. And I focus much of my material on index products. That's been the case at Cboe. But now my index focus is the NASDAQ 100 as opposed to the S&Ps or the Russell 2000. So a little over a year ago, I was thinking about this opportunity. I tried to think about NASDAQ broadly. And there are so many things that this exchange does, which from my perspective just opens up interesting avenues of exploration, more potential relationships and opportunities to learn. And that's something I love. Now, beyond that, I was thinking about the NASDAQ 100 and how it's matured. I think a fair number of people, depending on their age, will view the NASDAQ 100 as the technology index, and you may very well feel that way. It's sticky for a reason, and it's in part true. But looking out into the future, 5 years or more, or quite frankly, kind of thinking just about the present, tell me a business that's not reliant in large part on technology in some capacity, and I'll likely be able to show you a business that's not succeeding. So it's my belief that technology will likely continue to permeate every facet of the global economy. The companies that make up the NASDAQ 100 will likely continue to grow in terms of influence and ideally in terms of valuation. There's obviously going to be ebbs and flows. Last year was a difficult year for the index, but I genuinely believe that index investing is here to stay. Whether that's, you know, index tracking ETFs, mutual funds, what have you. And I also believe that the NASDAQ 100 is, it sounds a little bit cliche, but I like it, the benchmark for kind of a new generation of investors. And this isn't your and our dad's or some younger listener's grandfather's NASDAQ. We're home to the most innovative companies. But then I also think about companies like Pepsi or Costco, which are significant NASDAQ 100 constituents, and they too are innovative. You look at something like O'Reilly Automotive. That's a top 50 name in the NASDAQ 100, and I don't think many people would associate that with the index, or Marriott International or Keurig Dr. Pepper. I think you get my point here. But big picture, I thought that the future was bright at NASDAQ. I believe in the NASDAQ 100. And I think professionally that a lot of success is more a function of timing and luck than a lot of people are comfortable admitting. I can only control so much. And this was an opportunity that I embraced. I'm glad I did. And I look forward to, I get to do stuff like this, which I find super fun. I guess maybe you mentioned to a certain degree challenges, and I try to turn that on its head and just say those are different opportunities. In my role at NASDAQ, I can periodically turn around my education hat and put on a bit more of a business development hat, and I really, really like that. And that kind of runs parallel to the variety of avenues that are open to me now. And that's really, really exciting.
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed just briefly looking at your different jobs is you had, or at least developing now, a role in a creative side almost. And you mentioned being well-rounded, you know, making connections through investing that are broadly relatable to people. I think that's so important as someone who did not have a finance background growing up. And like you said, it reminds me of something my dad said. Remember how there'd be mystery readers in class and someone comes in and has to read, like a parent comes in and reads to the class and everything. I remember my dad came in one time and did it, and you're always so excited. And he started off his little spiel for his day saying, try to think of one job where you can't read. We're like, you don't require reading, like knowing how to read. This is third grade or whatever. And I remember sitting there, like being so stumped. I'm gonna find something to stump him. I'm gonna try to think of something, and I just could not think of anything. And I think of that when you say, you know, where isn't tech right now?
Can I ask you a question though? Curious what your dad did.
He's a lawyer.
Okay. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And it always stuck with me because I sat there and tried to think for the longest time, like, what is something that you don't need reading? And I really can't think of anything. And it's the same way. You think of any company, like look around your office right now, everything that is, you know, built structurally, supplied, all requires technology and is going to continue to rely on technology probably in a more prevalent manner.
That is my belief.
So that's great to see. Were you involved in those? I know this is QQQ, but were you involved in those QQQ commercials during March Madness at all?
Okay, so I like that question, and I do to a certain extent associate the March Madness, that time on the calendar, with their commercials. And this predates my being at NASDAQ, that I would have associated those two things. So we were planning a webinar in March with Invesco, who is a partner and the group managing the QQQ, which is an ETF product designed to track the NASDAQ 100. And I was trying to figure out ways to kind of weave in that NCAA narrative to our broader focus about how the index works, how people can access it. And hopefully I did that to a certain extent. And then just one other quick point. I think about creative or what I find to be interesting ways to position products. And I continue to do this like when I'm out walking or on a run or something. And the positioning for index products, and particularly the NASDAQ 100, intrigues me. It is not, to answer your question directly, no, they're not. I don't know who they work with from a marketing commercial standpoint, but I think that those things are impactful, and you can reach a broad and interesting subset of likely younger potential investors, people that are getting to the point in their lives where they start to have discretionary income. And it's helpful just in terms of brand recognition, et cetera. Not that they need my help at the NASDAQ with that. I think they've done quite a good job already.
Yeah, I've got my sports, you know, my jock friends who couldn't know a 401k from a 802k. And if we're sitting there watching a couple times, we'd just be like, is that for real? Like, is what is that? And it's all you need is that little spark and curiosity. And the fact they're coming to someone like me in the field means that they're probably a couple seconds away from a Google search. And that's how financial literacy starts. It's kind of almost from the ground up.
Yeah, so you need to be, or at least from my perspective, you need to generate that interest internally, not be told this is what you need to do. And I think that's what your dad was arguably doing by posing that question, mm-hmm. is not telling you there aren't jobs that don't require reading, but saying, here, you think for yourself, are there jobs you can do without spending the time in second or third grade or whatever it is, learning those foundational things? And again, bringing it back to technology, there's not too many lines of work these days that you are going to find that aren't being impacted and likely continue to be impacted by technology.
Hell yeah. So I'm looking now, coming across, it looks like, I'm paraphrasing here, but the Fed is thinking about pausing. I mean, the prognostication, I don't want to get into any of that. That's boring. It's stale. Do you think, is there anything that news outlets are missing by covering any of this? I mean, you got the debt ceiling stuff coming up. I don't want to dive too deep into it. I just want to know where your head's at.
Relative to, so when I started in this business, it was Greenspan's Fed and trying to decipher their language, the Fed has come light years in terms of really indicating what their intent is. And I think that's good. Less opacity for capital markets is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Do I think that news outlets are missing it? No, probably not. But what we've seen over the past just over a year since this rate hike cycle began is that clearly markets are influenced, and that influence reverberates throughout the real economy, like kind of down to Main Street, much more slowly. I do think the fact that we continue to see commercial bank failures, it could be an issue. Mm-hmm. And when I look out a little bit further, I'm old enough to remember the past few debt ceiling wranglings, and DC doesn't miss too many opportunities to do some political grandstanding and to try to squeeze blood from the stone. And I would expect that will go on again here. And I think it's a very real issue. When you go back to 2011, you had significant sovereign debt issues in Europe, and it led some of this political posturing to the only U.S. debt downgrade ever. I hope we don't get too close to that edge this time. I think it will be resolved, but I'm going to keep focusing my attention to a certain extent on what's going on in DC, because that needs to be resolved.
I am not looking forward to monitoring that, because like you said, there's so much nuance, and it's always going to come with some kind of agenda. But the stark reality is this is going to be a huge player for the next 2 months or so.
Agreed. I don't enjoy it. It's the 24-hour news cycle, and a lot of it's fear-mongering. But I forget what the exact number is, but the debt ceiling, and I'm not making a political argument, it's been raised like 105 times in my lifetime, right? Like governments do, to a certain extent, have to run a little bit differently than you and I with respect to our sort of credit limits. And that is a reality at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned this earlier about the NASDAQ being the benchmark of the 21st century. I'm not sure if you pulled that from my guide or not. Actually, I think I pulled that from your Twitter. So we're kind of going around in circles here, but let's dive a little deeper. You trimmed a little on the edges. What are some areas within that space that you're monitoring that you think are very exciting going forward, and that an investor looking to dip their toe in might want to know about?
Yeah. To a certain extent, I think that all of this is informed by my own personal experience. And I started in this business in the late 90s. And back then at Cboe, when I was on a trading floor, like the S&P 100 was sort of the bellwether option product. The Dow was also a very big deal. And over time, the S&P 500 became that real crux of activity. And now you're asking about the NASDAQ 100. And I won't go into sort of the overall makeup. People can use a Google search and look at the constituents and what sectors they fall in. I will point out, with respect to sort of the rate hike cycle and the macro backdrop currently, that financials are not included in the NASDAQ 100. And perhaps that's interesting against a very inverted yield curve and the most significant inflation we've seen in decades. I do think about its construction, and I think about consumer brands, and I think that brand equity matters. And so if your listeners do go through and take a list at the NASDAQ 100 constituents, I think they'd recognize about 80%+ of them, because they interact with those brands, or they use their technology, or they shop there, whatever. And then kind of going along your point about growing up, I didn't grow up in a house where investing was discussed or even very much a focus. But I do remember my mom talking about Peter Lynch, who launched and managed the Magellan Fund at Fidelity, and he's one of the more successful money managers in history. And one of his tenets for investing was observational, like asking yourself, are you investing in companies that you know, brands that you understand, like places that you observe that are full of people? And I think with the NASDAQ 100, that's likely the case. Beyond that, I am interested in what we've seen this year or kind of since equity markets bottomed late last year. The leadership on the part of mega cap, primarily tech companies, is significant. If I stretch out my time frame and take a more panoramic view, the NASDAQ 100's outperformance relative to the S&P 500 has been very steady for the past decade, if not longer. And it's not like the late 90s where the relationship between these two indices got very out of whack in a hurry when companies were hustling to just tack .com onto the end of their name. Companies and capital markets are moving in a direction that, in my opinion, benefits the way the NASDAQ 100 is constructed. And then, again, if listeners are looking to do some work on their own, you could ask yourself if you really want and need exposure to, and this is not a knock to, but for some of the bottom names in the S&P 500, look at the 400 through 500. I'm not going to pick on some specific companies, but are those brands that you want dollars in? If that's yes, fantastic. If it's not, maybe the NASDAQ 100 is right for you. So I didn't really hit on anything here and now, but understanding the construction and making informed decisions with respect to or after that knowledge, I think is a great way to really kind of sharpen your investing skills.
I love what you said about brand equity, because I think that's something that someone looking to dive in is a little scared of, saying, oh, well, I don't want to look through a bunch of white paper and I'm not sure what this company is, what they do. You remove a lot of that uncertainty, I think, with the NASDAQ 100.
I agree with you. And even from a broader standpoint, I think that's another reason that index investing is here to stay, as opposed to picking and choosing a name within a sector.
Yeah,
that can work out really, really well, but it's difficult to pick that winner over a longer time frame. And allocating smaller portions of investable assets to a name or two you believe in, fantastic. But in terms of just trying to grow a pool of money over time, I think it's easier, it's efficient in terms of fees, and I don't think it's going anywhere.
Yes. Yes, I love that. That's outstanding. Let's wade out of the weeds here a little bit. Pulled up your Twitter. There's some Twitter files here. No, you've seen this on the guide, but I love your tweet that quote tweeted UConn legend Gino Auriemma about body language, and you're talking about, you know, as a dad to an ambitious, upbeat athlete. That resonated with me. I don't have kids, but that's how my father raised me. Body language and always being ready. I can't tell you how many times when I'm sitting on the bench because I'm 5 feet tall, maybe 100 pounds, not getting in or getting reserve time. And, I'd be slumping like this and I can see my dad in the stands and he, gives me like one of like little these, like, just kind of walking around. And that stuck with me. So I know it's kind of hokey and lame and corny to put this into an investing perspective, but do you see any connective tissue there, as not as far as body language is concerned, but I think as far as having a positive attitude almost?
I don't think it's hokey, and maybe this is, so hang on, let me back up just really briefly. I work for an exchange and my Twitter is not littered with a bunch of investing advice. It's not what I do. The risk, given the work I do, is much greater than the potential reward. Like I'm not trying to get a bunch of Twitters on or followers on Twitter there. And so a lot of what I put on there is not related to work.
But that's also good and important, I think. Not that you, like you're trying to become some kind of visionary, but that helps, like we said earlier in the episode, that helps people understand.
It humanizes this business to a certain extent. And I think that's meaningful. So I agree with you there. But on the Oriyama thing, maybe it's old-fashioned, but I love the emphasis, the sort of bigger, broader points behind his argument that body language can say a lot and that enthusiasm. So just to set the stage, UConn women are perennial powerhouses in women's basketball and
in a
variety of other sports. Yeah.
In men's.
Correct. Are you a UConn grad?
No, but I do some freelance writing for the UConn blog.
Okay.
So,
And I think in everyday life, I think enthusiasm is contagious. I think about the upbeat people I work with, and they can keep me fired up when maybe I'm not. I think that his bigger point was sort of about trying to present yourself as something before you're really there. I think broadly, the millennial generation gets a bad rap there. It has not been my experience with younger coworkers and friends that they just expect things to be handed to them. But think to yourself, like, about the people you want to surround yourself with, and if they're upbeat, if they're loving life, if they have an appreciation for others being successful, those are the type of friends you want. And you just can't fake it with body language. I think it can be faked in a text generation because you have no idea if they're smirking, sending that off, or in even the Twitter generation where there's nothing behind that. And so I loved his emphasis there on growing over time and being in it for your teammates and for broader success. And yes, I do think that there is some capital market intersection there, because particularly when we're younger, I think we want to make a bunch of money quickly. But if you learn more about success in finance, the magic of compound interest, right? We're back in a situation where you can earn money on savings. And in the performance of indices over a long time frame, the likelihood of hitting it out of the park, so to speak, before you know how to swing the bat is very, very low. But if you are disciplined over a long time frame, the payoff can be very, very significant. So a little bit wandering there, but I do think that there's a lot of carryover in life and in investing.
Oof. I think that was the first baseball pun. So 29 minutes and no pun. Is that the longest you've ever gone?
Man, possibly.
Oof.
Are you a Reds fan, if I remember, or am I making that up?
No, I can't stand the Reds. I worked for the Bengals, and you know, a lot of stuff that we can take offline there. But no, I'm a Red Sox fan. You know, Connecticut, so then UConn, and then my dad being from Boston, or not from Boston, but went to law school up there, forced that upon me. So
I'm sorry about your Bruins.
Yeah, I not a hockey guy, thankfully, but the stink of that whole thing clearly permeated the garden on Monday, so for the basketball team. But I can go on that for days, but and a similar topic, you know, what else are you burning on in life? You know, kind of the theme of this has been being well-rounded. I've had a lot of guests on this year where I didn't want to just talk investing. Of course, I do want people to learn and to develop some investing skills, but I think it's so important to find the, you know, the relations between other parts of your life and investing and just other things you're seeing, doing, you know, let me have it.
That's a fun question. So I'll loop in a little bit of baseball because I do have an 8-year-old that loves it and plays very actively. Like I go to practice and games very regularly and I enjoy that. I also, as I think you know, make time for live music pretty regularly. So that was difficult a couple of years ago when that wasn't viable for quite some time. And the way that works or influences my day-to-day is it allows me, I'll often combine it, not combine, but I will go out and listen to music on headphones or go to live music and it clears my mind. And I think people are well served by figuring out that thing where you're able to lose track of yourself for some period of time. It can be resetting. And I almost don't care what it is. Painting, reading, seeing films, whatever. Finding that thing where you're not just wrapped up in the day-to-day. And so I make a point to do that often. I like going to, you know, venues all around Chicago and seeing shows. I will continue to do that. And often that sort of stuff ends up on my Twitter too. So,
do you structure it out at all? Because I found myself, there's a couple podcasts I've started listening to that they start every January with like their goals podcast, and they are incredibly regimented about that. And I know that's part of the entertainment value, but do you structure out and say, I want to go to one live show a week or two, you know, two a month type of thing? Or do you just, like, how do you organize that?
It used to be easier to sort of set a goal like that. And having a kid and just life changes makes that a little bit more difficult. But prioritizing yourself, now I might sound a little not judgy, but just old here. I think some people, when they become parents, allow themselves to take a back seat. And I think it does your child a disservice and whatever extended relationships you have. You need to maintain the stuff that makes you happy. And that can be done in parallel with parenting or work duties. So I do make a point to carve out some time to either run or walk. I live in Evanston, which is just north of Chicago, and I'm near the lake. And I'll put on music or put on a podcast and get lost. I do carve out time for that. The live music part of it is a little bit more difficult because it depends on an act of interest being around. So that's more ad hoc. But it's something that if I go a month or two without seeing a concert, I'm kind of chomping at the bit.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I encourage everyone to do what Kevin is talking about. You know, find your thing. It broad. I mean, it could be something as simple as, you know, you go take your dog for a walk every, you know, every day. Don't bring your phone or just unplug and everything. Any particular music you got going on here? I mean, I'm not as in tune as I used to be. With the live shows, just because, you know, life, like you said, it catches up to you. But what else you got?
That one I could go on for a long time. What have I?
Well, here, how about this? I'll give you one because, you know, my family always had classic rock going on on the radio, on the way to soccer practice, on the way to basketball. And I, you know, I branched out. I have a very wide range, but it always surprises me when, like, I hear a song from someone who's like kind of like a legend, and didn't realize like that guy's everywhere. So I was watching some YouTube series, and Zevon came up, and I was like, wow! It was a Lawyers, Guns, and Money song.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is delightful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I threw a couple of the songs in the playlist, and now Spotify, with its algorithm, you know, will continually feed me new songs. And that's just kind of a new thing I've been, you know, like, oh, wow, this guy's great. How have I gone 33 years and never heard him before? It's amazing how...
Does Spotify being able to, I don't get how they do it, but to feed you stuff that's somehow related to it and a lot of it hits, mm-hmm. you're spot on there as far as discovering something that does it between your ears and then learning more. That has never been easier. When we were younger, you'd go have to spend $20 on a CD or a tape before that, and it might be a dud. And so it is so awesome to have that accessibility these days. Love it.
I swear I can feel my synapses firing when I hear a song I haven't heard before and I'm listening to the lyrics and I'm processing the sound. It feels like I am almost like I have a higher state of like you have to listen to something. Now, trust me, I'll play like my hits and everything and I have everything, but it almost takes like a conscious effort to like, all right, click a shuffle and just stuff that you've never heard before. You know, don't skip it. Just listen to it.
The even playing your hits, though, you're doing that because you know it's going to have some likely positive influence or mm-hmm. impact sort of your mood. And maybe we'll leave it at this, but I have a book downstairs called This Is Your Brain on Music. Mm-hmm. And it's really fascinating to get a much more scientific take on what happens upstairs when we listen to different types of music and how we respond and how influential that can be. I really enjoyed it and would recommend to anybody that's made it this far and yeah. sort of has this sort of interest in music and how it works in our brains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are running short on time here, so we'll cut off from there. But Kevin Davitt, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, we got to get this to be a regular occurrence. You know, we could, you know, keep this running for hours, I feel like, and dive into all different types of topics. Congratulations to your Marquette Golden Eagles, by the way, Big East champs. That the only team to have stymied UConn this year, well, besides Xavier. But it was great talking to you, and hopefully we can chat again in the future.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it and look forward to the next one.
Take care.